Dit is de mobiele voicemail van Tim Krabbe. Spreek een boodschapje in. Bedankt.
Hello Tim, it's Richard Moore here from the Cycling Podcast. We'd love to talk to you about your book, The Rider. Stage 6 of the Tour de France is visiting Montaiguel this week, as you will no doubt know. And we've spoken about your book to Laurence Ten Dam, to Tom Southam and Max Leonard, who retraced the Tour de Montaiguel and has written about it. And it would be great to include your voice too in our podcast. You may be out on your bike. I can see from Strava that you're putting in some huge distances. But please do get back to me and look forward to hearing from you. Thanks.
You are listening to Kilometre Zero by the Cycling Podcast. Powered by Zwift, the fitness app where fun is fast.
Meruès, Lozère, June 26, 1977. Hot and overcast. I take my gear out of the car and put my bike together. Tourists and locals are watching from sidewalk cafes, non-racers. The emptiness of those lives shocks me.
The Cycling Podcast bedtime story read by Richard Moore, a nightly ritual on the Tour de France that we've kept very well hidden.
Well, that's the opening paragraph, of course, to The Rider by Tim Krabbe, who I tried to call. We heard the voicemail at the start of this episode of Kilometre Zero. And, well, we'll try him again because it's very fitting that we speak to him and talk about his book, which a lot of people call the greatest book ever written about cycling. Because on stage six on Thursday, the Tour de France visits Montaiguel, only the second time. And his book is set on a not quite sure if it's fictional or not, race, the Tour de Montaiguel, from, well, now over 40 years ago, isn't it? And it really... It's a short, it's almost a novella, it's 148 pages long, and it describes from start to finish the race from the rider's point of view, from a racer's point of view. There are episodes where he tells us about his own cycling background. I mean, it's worth saying Tim Krabbe is a very kind of revered writer in Holland. He wrote the book that became The Vanishing, a film that many people will have seen and been quite terrified by. But he's also a very keen cyclist, a very keen chess player. Don't want me to read another bit, Lionel?
Yes, please, Richard. Just let me get comfortable.
Well, there's a bit here where I actually thought of you because this reminiscent of something you might have done as a teenager getting into cycling. But he, as a 15-year-old, when he got his first bike, having actually gone and seen Charlie Gall appear at a race, an exhibition race close to his house. He got a bike and he worked out a circuit and he would time himself on the circuit, but he did so using his chess timer. I mean, these were the days before all the gadgets that we have now that by which we can measure distances and performances and so on. So he left his chess timer in the window and he had developed a technique. I developed a technique of hopping off the bike at full speed in front of the house and landing precisely in front of the window where my clock was so I could note my time as quickly as possible. One entire cerebral lobe is still reserved for my record, 46 minutes and 53 seconds. Once I'd read the clock, I would remain leaning over my handlebars for a few minutes until I had enough strength to put the key in the lock. After that, I would lie in my bed for 15 minutes. Tim has gone nuts, my brother would say when he saw me like that. Well, lots of cyclists and cycling people love The Rider by Tim Krabbe. And we asked one of our audio diarists, Tom Southam, who's a big fan, to tell us his thoughts.
I can't remember when I first read The Rider, but I absolutely loved it. It's an incredible book. There's some things in there, the way that he writes about being inside the head of a cyclist that ring true. I mean, there's one line early on that's like non-racers, the emptiness of their lives shocks me, or something like that, which is it's such a bike rider thought. When you don't have racing, what do you have? And like the idea that there's just nothing else, super cool. And the other one that really stands out, apart from the maths, which is great, is constantly doing like maths of gears in his head. Because when I was racing and I was like really trying to sort of concentrate, I would reverse the names of the bike frames or the sponsors on jerseys, just as this. So that was bang on true. The thing that always, yeah, the other thing was that my 20 was clean as a whistle, which was such a cool part of the book. Nowadays, I guess they would have to say my 32 or my 30 was as clean as a whistle, which doesn't really cut it, does it? But yeah, incredible book.
My name is Max Leonard, and I'm a cyclist, and I'm a writer of a few books, including Lantern Rouge, about the last man in the Tour de France, and Higher Calling, which is a sort of lengthy investigation of why cyclists like to go up mountains. I think I probably first read The Rider maybe 15 years ago, 10, 15 years ago, and it did immediately leave an impression. It's about an amateur racer in the Cevennes Mountains in south of France, and it really, it's kind of fictional, but kind of about Tim Krabbe, the writer, and a race that he did. And I think it probably remains one of the best books, fiction or non-fiction, that describe how it is to be riding a bike and probably racing as well. The route of Montiguel that Krabbe rode in his book, you can piece together from the text. In fact, you can go in there and there's names of villages, there's names of different mountains he goes through, different rivers he goes past. And I certainly wasn't the first one to do this. I think, you know, right from when the book was written, there had been Dutch fans especially who'd gone and ridden it with him as a sort of celebration of the book. But I didn't think that anyone had ever really written about it, or and certainly no one had recorded it at that point, because this was in the early-ish days of Strava, so there was still vast swathes of France that weren't really segmented in the way that they are now. You sort of get the sense that Krabbe wants to keep the area to himself because it's just such fantastic riding country, and the Cevennes proper, which the race only touches on really at the end of the stage, the Cevennes proper are sort of very dense wooded hills with beautiful, you know, rivers and streams running through them, and you very rarely get above the tree line because they're not huge. The Lozère region, which Montiguel I think stands on the edge of, is I think it's the least populated region in France, and yeah, it's very densely wooded on the lower slopes, and at the top it's a bit bare, and so it could be very windy. And I do also believe it's one of the rainiest places in France, so let's hope they don't get a shower like they got on the first day. I don't know if the Tour du Montiguel ever actually existed as a race, but I think I'm right in saying that Krabbe had or has a holiday home not far off, and I think he did a lot of his bike racing when he was a good bike racer around there in sort of obscure local French races, and the different characters that he races against in the book are based on people that he might have raced in real life. It's all sort of a funny mix of fact and fiction and Tour de France legend and philosophical observations on bike racing that clearly he's been, you know, he spent long hard hours on the bike thinking about.
You are listening to Kilometre Zero by the Cycling Podcast, powered by Zwift, the fitness app that turns indoor riding into a game. Explore endless roads, race riders from all over the world, and boost your fitness with monthly training plans and structured workouts. Join the world's training playground where fun is fast. Go to Zwift.com and start your free trial.
I'm Michael Woods with EF Pro Cycling. With me breaking my femur, I've had bad injuries in the past, particularly when I was a runner. I had a stress fracture, and one of my big regrets as a runner was after breaking my foot. I was casted for 2.5 months and just not mobile at all. And I think it ultimately was what put the nail in the coffin of my running career. So I'm a big believer in when you're rehabilitating to still incorporate movement into your recovery. Through the help of a physiotherapist in Girona named Richard Spink, get my knee flexion to an angle where I could get my leg around the pedal. And doing so, I was able to get back on the trainer about 2 weeks in. And even though I was riding for only 15 minutes at a 50 watt average, that movement, I think, really increased my rate of healing, and not just helped me physically, but mentally, the act of just doing some physical activity in the day was really cathartic. Yeah, I'm a huge fan of it. I think it gives you, it's a lot more difficult to really push yourself when you're just alone. And when you get on a platform like Zwift, you get that same level of competitiveness. And I've put out some of the biggest numbers in my life on Zwift just because of that competitive feel.
Every once in a while, someone along the road lets us know how far behind we are. A man shouts, "Faster!" Probably thinks bicycle racing is about going fast. Everywhere I come, the lead riders have been there 2, 3, 4 minutes before me. It's like being handed a newspaper with the front page torn off. No worse way to follow a road race than to be in it. Something we should all probably bear in mind when we're interviewing riders at the end of races and asking them what happened. They often don't know. That's a very good way of describing it. But we heard there from Max Leonard and before that from Tom Southam. And Lionel, today you spoke to a former rider who's got a very strong affinity with the rider.
Indeed, Laurence Tendam, former professional rider, of course, finished ninth in the Tour de France back in 2014, recently retired at the end of last season, is now working in the cycling media and has made a film about, inspired really by Tim Krabbe's novel. Is it a novel? We'd say novella.
It's a novel because, I mean, it's obviously based, he's the central character. It's pieced together, I think, from real races with real people. And obviously it includes quite a lot of cycling history as well. Obviously real people. But there are flights of fancy in there as well.
Well, the documentary that Tendam made is called His 22 Was Still Clean. And, well, that reference will be familiar to anyone who's read the book, but basically it means that he didn't use the 22-tooth sprocket. The Dutch title I won't attempt to pronounce, but Laurence Tendam mentions it. I caught him on the phone when he was heading into the studio in the Netherlands to summarise and give his analysis on the day's Tour de France stage. But he's looking forward to Stage 6 in particular because the whole region means an awful lot to him. And, well, as he says, the book was really the very start of his journey into cycling.
I did read the book first time when I was 14 years old, I think, and it's one of the reasons I started cycling, you know. And to be honest, Tim Krabbe was like a hero for me because the guy raced in France Classics, you know. So he was and by the time I was just racing the Dutch Crits, so I was always aiming to do also one of those big French amateur classics. And later, of course, I noticed that the race he describes is not one of the biggest in France, but it's got everything in it, what's important for racing. So, you know, for the riders who really want to win the race, he really describes it nice. And I think that's why the book is so exciting to young riders and also old riders and people who read it. They can relate to being a top rider, really wanting to win a race. Actually, I borrowed it from the library. You know, I always aim to find sport books when I was young, and I think I stumbled on it on the library, and it's also a staple for cyclists on the list for school, you know. So I think that's the first time I did read it. Since I made the documentary about it last month, you know, I really had to reread it, and I noticed more things. Actually, the guy Tim Krabbe also he did something on my retirement as a rider. He did something really nice. He rewrote a chapter, and then I was the Cycle Golf Renner actually. So that was an honor to me, you know. It was the guy I started cycling, because of him I started cycling, and he was on my retirement party and did something special for me. So last 2 years, I did reread it, I think a lot, maybe 5 times, just because I wanted to make the documentary on the rider, which we released 4 days ago on YouTube. We interviewed a few guys from that time, like Maarten de Croo, Peter Winner, who won 2 stages in Alpe d'Huez, who actually also started cycling because of that book. We interviewed some writers about the style of writing, because actually it's a novel. It's not like a sports book, but it's like a literature.
And then also we interviewed Tim to ask him what we should do when we were there, which roads we should ride, which dinner we should eat. And then we just went there to discover the roads and to discover the cuisine and to discover the area and to discover the region and to discover why the book was still important for the riders right now. And it's called Saint 22 was nog schoon. It's a Dutch title. It's subtitled, which means his 22 was still clean, which is a saying in the book that he's got really strong legs and he doesn't need to use his lightest gear, you know, his smallest gear. So actually it's something people who read the book know what we're talking about. Also, you have to know, like in the 70s when he wrote the book, the cycling in the Netherlands was still a sport for like farmers and working people and stuff like that. And Tinkerbe was a guy who was a master in chess, or we say grootmeester, grandmaster. So he was a master in chess. He wrote literature, and then he suddenly started to write about a lower echelon sport like cycling, and that's why cycling also was being accepted in the higher class in the Netherlands. And that's why, for example, maybe now Tom Dumoulin is racing his bike. So I think it was very important for cycling in Holland that the book was written. And the way he describes a cycling race, yeah, that's like magic how he describes it, you know, like he describes at one point that you cannot think about something else as winning the race in the race. You don't have other thoughts. It's like a big round steel ball inside your head without any things to think about. You know, the head is empty, and such things are like crazy good. He describes it. Yes. The thing is that as I read the book last 6 months a lot, I noticed things I didn't know it was from that book, but I still had them in my head during a race. Like if my front wheel was first in a race, I was like, okay, currently I'm leading the Tour de France, for example, if I did that in the third stage, but it's from the rider. Also, that my pulses, you know, how much tan they had, and the sweaty hairs are in the direction of which you're riding, stuff like that. I didn't know, but it was all from the book, you know, and such things are actually nice to see. And actually the movie we made has all those small things, you know, when you really know the book, there's so much to discover in the movie. We also at one point put our bottle in our back pocket, because Anke Thiel in the book says, yeah, the bike has to be as light as possible. So that's why I put my water in my rear pocket of my jersey, and such things we all put in the book, you know, such small things. And that's why it was so nice to make this, because you really had to go into the book even more deep.
One of the things that Tim Krabbe does is he's obviously very into numbers, and he numbers every race that he does. And here's another passage from the book. At the start of race 129, July the 28th, 1974, in the town of Hoogskarspel, my first race of more than 100 kilometres, I was extremely tense. There were a multitude of signs that something terrible was about to happen, but not a single excuse not to start. Criteriums in Holland: curve, sprint, brake, curve, sprint, brake, curve, sprint, brake, curve, every 20 seconds a curve, a hard-riding house of pain, 2.5 hours long, unimaginable if you've never been in it yourself. But even though I tagged along quite well in the peloton, the tension didn't go away. After 40 kilometres, one of my front spokes popped. It didn't fall out, it just rattled along. There didn't seem to be any problem. The wheel didn't rub, there was barely a wobble to it. I wondered whether here one could speak of a puncture. The spoke could come flying out any moment, and then my puncture would be gone. I climbed off. Puncture. In my cycling logbook, under results, I wrote, malfunction. So we heard from Lawrence Tendam before then, didn't we, Lionel?
We did, yeah. And you can watch the film that he's made on YouTube. We'll put a link to it in the episode notes. But it features, among other people, Tim Krabbe, the author of the book, but also Bert Wagendorp, who we featured in a Friends special a few years ago, because he's written a fictional novel about cycling inspired by another great climb, Mont Ventoux. The book's called Ventoux. It also features Case Ball, who is riding this Tour de France for Team Sunweb, as well as Peter Winnen, who's won a couple of stages on Alpe d'Huez. So it's a it's a real it's a celebration of Dutch cycling as much as it is of Tim Krabbe's novel.
Well, speaking of Tim Krabbe, Lionel, I did finally get hold of him. Now, one of the problems with getting in touch and speaking to him on the phone is that, as he explained, he's quite deaf and initially said it would be impossible to do an interview with a podcast. But we persuaded him, or he was persuaded, and very pleased indeed, and indeed honoured to have Tim Krabbe on the Cycling Podcast.
Well, I'm very happy that the book has been living now for 42 years. It's a very old book, which is hard to realize at times. It still lives. Today I got a message from my publisher that the 46th printing will be ready tomorrow or the day after. So it's very nice that after all those years, the book is still living. It's a dream for a writer to have a book that has such a long life. Apparently, I managed to catch something, but I never tried anything apart from writing a good story about cycling. I did not have any deeper intentions, just to write story about cycling. And I think one of the reasons for the success of the book might be that it does not try to find any excuses to have as a subject cycling. It's just without any excuse. Most books that are about sports have some social background or something. They want to say something deeper about humanity or whatever. I just want to tell a story about cycling, about the cycling race, and apparently I have done that pretty well. Writing still has a lot of meaning for me, but I just do it because I like it very much. I do not have any purpose in it. I do not feel any sort of meaning inside it. Just something I happen to do for fun. And it doesn't really mean anything, I think. I'm watching the tour every day today. I also did so today. Of course, I will watch it with special interest tomorrow when they do my, between parentheses, mountain, the Mont Aiguë. Yes, certainly. I happened to come to the Cévennes because I had a girlfriend at the time whose parents had a house there. That's over 50 years ago, or maybe precisely 50 years ago. And it played a major part in my starting cycling. I remember seeing, it was an old dream to become a bicycle racer, and then I saw somebody climbed a mountain, and it impressed me very much. And I decided at that point, I'm going to do that too. I'm going to be in it. And that's what I've done. I was already 29, I think, so almost 30. And I've been racing then for 8 years. I did something like 500 races. And later, I did that for 8 years. And later in life, I picked it up again, and with the 60-plus riders, I also added 8 seasons of racing to that. So now I'm 77, and I still ride a lot, but I do not race anymore. In the corona period, that was a discovery for me to do solos again, big solos. I mean, I've done something, almost 20 solos of over 100 kilometers, I think. I haven't done that for a long time. I ride with my friends, some sort of a club, the Windjammers. We do, not really very long tours, maybe 80 to 100 kilometers, but that's in a big group where I never am in front, of course. I have a special dispensation owing to my old age. But riding solo was a new discovery, really. It turned out I still like that very much. I have published a book of short pieces about cycling 5 years ago, but I'm not going to do any new book in the vein of the writer. No, I'm not.
You've been listening to an episode of Kilometre Zero by the Cycling Podcast, supported by Zwift.